pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Hour number three is now underway. 251-343-0106. Text line, you need to be in touch with the program. Yes, I'm aware we had a moment of silence in the last segment, or segment before last, but I think we got that fixed, at least for the time being. Recapping the news, a lot of discussion about Lindsey Graham, now dead at 71, unexpected. Just sort of came all of a sudden. He had been ill, but, you know, everybody was on McConnell death watch. The McConnell thing is just ripe with conspiracy theories. And the AI generated photos. But I got less concerned about that. He's on his way out. It's just like, oh, you guys are spending a lot of time talking about Mitch McConnell, but have you introduced you to our governor, Kay Ivey, here? So, the McConnell people need to go find the Ivey people and hire them for this. Let's keep rolling here. Ultra Runner, even our state leaders fall into the trap of saying the bridge is the same size as the entire general fund budget. But large projects are amortized, and TIF loans are cheap. Pay the bridge off of 30 years, and it becomes less than 7% of ALDOT's budget. Are they being gaslighted, or are they trying to gaslight us? Try to gaslight you. Let me say this about this bridge. And it gets back to the mentality. And like I said, we spent a long time in the first 2 hours talking about how people in the rest of the state kind of view Mobile as the beach or whatever. And they play to these ignorances, our policymakers do. In fact, some of them may even believe that Mobile is the beach. Anyway, the point being there, though, that the state, would you say if the state were landlocked, we'd be better off? Or having a coastline is a net benefit to the state? That's the question. If you polled all 67 counties, is having a coastline a good or bad thing for the state of Alabama? Most people say good thing. And then we could get into the reasons. Access to the open seas, a tourist economy, you know, ports, fishing, oil, offshore oil. Go down the list, okay? But having a coastline comes with certain responsibilities, including building bridges over open bodies of water and population centers. You want to call up the governor of Florida, say we'd like to cede Baldwin and Mobile counties to the state of Florida? We don't want to build a bridge? Or would you like to keep the coastline? That the state benefits from having a coast, even if you are in other parts of the state. There is a net benefit. However, there are certain responsibilities, certain duties required to maintain that coastline. And that includes building an interstate bridge from point A to point B. And that's the discussion we have. It's a hard concept for some. But if you really believe that there's a tangible impact on everybody's life from Lauderdale County to Jackson County to Houston County all the way to Mobile County, then the state has some buy-in here, okay? And this is the way they view it, because we've seen this in the past, the BP oil settlement. And guys, let's not fool ourselves. Casino gambling wants to be at the beach. And if the price is right, someone, a lawmaker from North Alabama, will look at it and say, well, they really impact my people here. Why not? They'll figure it out. That's the way they view it. I mean, it's just like a net gain. But there's an argument to be made, Ultra Runner, that the state should invest in its coastline. And it's going to be more expensive to maintain infrastructure along the coast than it would be in Geneva County or wherever, Claiborne County. Do you like having the coast? I mean, this is what happened. Like, Florida ceded part of its state to the state of Alabama. If you go back and you look at old maps and history, from the Florabama to that Perdido Bridge was state of Florida. But when Alabama said, well, we'll build the bridge crossing that body of water over that pass, and it was a very expensive bridge, Florida said, okay, in return, we will give you shoreline all the way to where the Florabama is today. You want to just do that? You just want to give it to Florida? Say, hey, I'll build our I-10 bridge. We'll give you Mobile. We can be in, I mean, but no, obviously not. But if you like having a coast, if you like having nice things, you got to take care of those nice things. And that includes an interstate highway bridge. Mike, it's kind of weird Trump weighed in to suggest Graham's sister Darlene should replace him. Maybe that's a short-term fix. Unnamed texter, America lacks a legitimate conservative party. The Republican Party has been fundamentally liberal, born as a radical force that centralized power through the 14th Amendment by codifying the proposition nation myth. The early GOP shattered original federalism, a framework of modern conservative, quote-unquote, justice is still used to enforce national rules. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party abandoned its historical defense of localism to become the ultimate vanguard of progressive politics. Without any faction defending the pre-1868 decentralized republic, both parties simply fight for control of a consolidated state. The conservatism battles of today are fought through a leftist paradigm and will end in leftists unless federalism is embraced. That will not happen. No money, no bribes, no power in that. Cultural issues are just used to drive up turnout. A Dobbs decision was a lark. I'm skeptical that the federalism thread will be pulled much harder than that. But they love to talk about it. They do like to talk about federalism as it pertains to our federal government. But there is an imbalance in the system. But it's driven by partisan politics. That's what sort of marginalized Congress, if you will. But also, just part of this discussion, I think, is also just the role the government plays in our lives now relative to the late 19th century and most of the 20th century. The role of the state is much larger. So when people vote on things, they view it. You're right. They view it through that lens. And yes, culture issues are just a hot button topic to drive up enthusiasm for the sake of an election. Leo, hi. One would love to be annexed by Florida. No more income tax and no more tax on groceries. Should be getting them billed for that property taxes. Derek, the state is not investing. We are. Investing means paying for it. We are paying for it. Yeah, but the state has control of the money, and they get to say yes, investment, no investment. So you're just arguing over semantics here. So you elect these people to make those decisions. So the state is a verb. Not state as a verb. The state as the actor is investing. Let's see here, Mike. What's crazy is the coastline could pay for its own way for the bridge if the state wasn't taking the majority of our tax revenue and sending it to areas of state to produce zero value to Alabama. Well, I don't think they produce zero value. I think it's this. They do have some value, but there's a lot of power in those areas. The southern part of the state really doesn't punch as hard as it should, especially population. That it could have more of a say in Montgomery, but you look at statewide elections. And this is like something, you know, I spend copious amounts of time discussing on the show. Why do some people in Alabama look at like Montgomery as a far off place? They today have more in common with Biloxi, New Orleans, Pensacola. That's really the state they're in. That's just not the way the government, the lines are drawn. That perhaps there is something to that. I mean, how do you think people in Pensacola feel about Tallahassee? They feel probably left out, but then people in Miami probably feel the same. But we got to do a better job in our part of the state, playing a more active role in state politics. Yes, it seems like it's a million miles away. It seems irrelevant to our life, what they're doing in Montgomery. But this is how you get a $7.70 toll. The Steve Flowers. A longtime state pundit. And he was on my show in Huntsville 2019-ish when the first toll fiasco was underway. And he said this on the air. He's like, you know, I told the governor, I told Joe Bonner, who was our chief of staff at the time, that you just go ahead and do whatever you need to do. Most of the people in the state aren't going to care if you charge them a $20 toll. They could care less. You're not going to feel any fallout. Maybe you get a challenger and you lose Mobile County. So what? You're still going to win Birmingham. You're still going to win Huntsville. You're still going to win Montgomery. You just do what you need to do. I'm afraid that's become part of it here. And we got statewide elections. We're split into two media markets. I mean, we're split into two states, the media market is, and, you know, there's not an emphasis put on Mobile. When politicians come down here to visit, they do the obligatory thing. They stop at all the media outlets. This is why you get Jared Hudson on three shows, and three shows on one station in the same day. They're doing their southern swing. They're checking all their boxes, and then they're going to go back to Birmingham and really focus on where their home turf is. When's the last time you had a statewide candidate really do well from South Alabama? Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Everybody made my prediction. So if I get stoned, I'm just carrying on an old family.
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just like old Bandit Run.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Coming up in the next segment, Dale Jackson from WVNN, Yellhammer News. So you stay tuned for that tomorrow on the program, we have the legendary Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs and a couple of guests to be named later. I'll work on that at the conclusion of today's program. Just one text here. The corridor between Lafayette and Pensacola suggests seed from their states and form a new one should just succeed. Hey, there's a book written about this, the idea of a southern state. And it was a little conspiratorial about the power company. But the idea was form your own little coastal state. I guess it was going to go from like Mariana all the way to Mississippi state line. Should have been like the panhandle of Florida and maybe Escambia, Baldwin, and Mobile counties. But that's not going to happen. We're not going to cede part of the state to create a new state, a 51st state. You think about that. I guess if you wanted to increase Republican, the Republican mix in the Senate, because it'd be one of the most conservative states in America, the Florida Panhandle and South Alabama. I mean, I would rival. I don't think. I mean, you would have a pocket of Democrats around Mobile and Pensacola. You probably could support. Would you be able to have two congressmen? I guess, yeah. The way it's constituted now, it'd be a very, very, very conservative state. But I don't think that's going to happen. I just making that point to say, hey, we have nice things in Alabama, including a coastline, and the state doesn't need to take this tack that. Hey, that down there, that bridge, that's for those people down there, those people who live at the beach. I'm not kidding. I mean, y'all saw the Bill Britt segment in 2019. By the way, just taking money from Aldott. But the whole, like, discussion was about the those people down there don't want to pay for their own bridge. They just don't want to pay for their own bridge. They want a free bridge. And it was just sort of like, no. I mean, I dare say that a lot of people in Mobile don't even think about the beach. It's just like any other city. Then there's like a crowd of people, I think, who in Mobile, and you can tell me this is true or false, who look at the flight to Baldwin County, the flight to Fairhope and Daphne, and people moving there and driving across to work every day, and not really being for that. It is stunning their growth. It's making the city, the population is a release valve, and if you throw up an impediment, including a $7.70 toll or a $3 toll or whatever it's going to be when it's all said and done, maybe that's enough to get people to stay and live in Mobile instead of live in Baldwin County. It ought to be people in Baldwin County who are, you know, really hurt by this. Yeah, Senator Elliott, like I'm in the same boat. I don't go to Mobile that much. I see it. Drive out to the bay. Going somewhere, and you can look across the bay, but there's unless we're going shopping Costco or wherever, you got most of what you need on this side of the bay, especially if you work over here. How many people live in Mobile and work in Baldwin County? That's another question. But it doesn't matter. We shouldn't. The whole goal here is essentially to try to get as much money out of commuters passing through the state. I get it. But that $7.70 toll is very steep. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. I ain't got a dime, but what I
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program if you so choose. Joining us now on the line, since it is Monday, we hear from Dale Jackson from WVNN in Huntsville, Alabama, as well as Yellowhammer News. Dale, good morning. How are you?
I could not be any better. Thrilled to be here with you. Very exciting. This week should be pretty interesting. I guess Tommy Tuberville is an Alabama resident, so we're good there. So we're done with that story, right?
No, I mean, that's what we're going to discover, but we have to pretend as serious members of the media that this is something that the facts must be laid out for all of us to consider and deliberate it over and come to a reasonable conclusion.
I don't think I'll be doing that.
Well, I'm just telling you, that's you want to be the most trusted journalist, I am told.
Governor-elect, I called it a year and a half ago, still is the same.
You have to go through the checklist here. I don't make the rules here. I don't make the rules here, but this is what I have come to learn.
Excellent. I look forward to the failures continuing to fail and not understanding why. And then I had a good conversation with Ron Sparks on my TV show this weekend. And I'll just be honest with you. They should have put him at the top of the ticket. He's a little boring, but he comes off as like a normal guy. He's a 71-year-old man, looks real good for his age. He won a statewide race before. I mean, I'm not buying the hype. I realize he got crushed by Bentley, and he knows it too. But it just, you know, it was interesting to see his demeanor compared to what we've been seeing from a lot of people. He wanted to talk about what he wanted to actually do and get back into expecting pumps and stuff like that, helping farmers and things like that. I mean, all the stuff you do when you're running for office, don't get me wrong, I'm not naive to think that there's anything here other than he's running for office, but at least he seemed to have a strategy for what he was doing. These other guys running on the Democratic side, I mean, it just seems like they're waiting for whatever news to happen, and then they come out and hold a press conference, and then everyone goes, okay, cool, thanks.
Well, in our just we're going to attack Trump or Tuberville for the 100th time. That's really proven to be a very effective tool, I see.
Well, I mean, effective in what way? Getting on television or winning elections?
I was being sarcastic in winning elections. Because getting on television really doesn't really do it for you, does it?
Correct. Not anymore. I mean, you got they've got to figure out a way to make it to where they're getting some traction other than we're not Tuberville and Tuberville bad and Trump bad. I just don't think Trump bad, Tuberville bad works.
No, what the Democratic Party doesn't work.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah. Do you see Tabitha Eisner, your buddy?
Oh, yeah.
So there are special elections all over the state on August 11th in 1, 2, 6, and 7, those congressional districts. Mm-hmm. And she is calling on members of the Democratic Party to vote in the Republican primary.
Oh, really?
The vice chairwoman of the Alabama Democratic Party has issued the marching orders for Democrats to vote in the Republican primary on August 11th.
What's the strategy there?
I don't know. But just to play Operation Chaos or whatever.
Yeah, but what is the point? How does that help her?
Well, she said it. I don't know. I got to like the third line of her screed, and I was like, all right, that's enough for me.
Okay. I'm just wondering, like, what is the play? What is the game plan? What is all that stuff? And what exactly do you want to accomplish with that? I mean, is there some bigger strategy?
Maybe they're going to pick the most liberal Republican. I don't know, Dale.
Yeah, no, I'm not asking you to answer the questions. I'm just wondering what it is.
Well, you could speculate.
Yeah, I mean, the only speculation I could possibly have is she doesn't know what she's doing. Because, I mean, honestly, I'm kind of flabbergasted by it because it doesn't make any sense. What exactly is the strategy? Because when you look at it, you would say, okay, so just vote for the most liberal Republican because we know we're going to lose?
Or how is about
it vote
this?
For the person that can't win the general because they're too liberal, so you'll vote for the Democrat? I mean, what's the strategy?
Force the Alabama legislature to close the primaries, partisan primaries in this state.
Huh, I mean, I can't imagine that's her goal, but I mean, I don't get it. I haven't seen the story, so I don't know what the issue is. But it seems rather silly.
You'd have to follow Tabitha Eisner's social media if you could stomach it, but that's what she's saying.
She just pops up occasionally in news stories, and that's all I see her. Yesterday she was out dancing and stepping. So I guess that's what we're going to see from her. And good for them. Good for them.
Hey, I'm all for her being the face of Alabama Democrats. Mm. Much better than Joe Reed.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily good for anyone, but if the
chattery class has got to love it, though.
I think it would actually be good for Democrats. Someone that can not, I don't believe this, but you could probably sell it this way, that she's a reasonable white woman. I think Alabama Democrats would benefit from a face. I'm dead serious. You could sell her as a reasonable white woman. That's why I was so shocked to see, and this goes back a bit, and this might be a deep cut, but Subel Cobb, what is she doing? She could have easily been the face of the Democratic Party and come off as a somewhat sane individual.
Well, she's not sane.
Well, I get that part. No, I don't think Tabitha Eisner is sane either. But I'm saying, how do we, if you're the Democrats, I don't know why we're strategizing for them. But if we were them, the argument would be find someone that could put forth that appearance.
Did they just want attention for themselves?
Okay.
That's all I could figure, right? Because they're not going to win any elections. I mean, is that Tom Butler state Senate seat or Merrill Lynch going to win because of anything Tabitha Eisner or Subel Cobb would have done?
It's about mitigating damage. I mean, the way you're laying it out is actually correct, but
there's nothing they could do.
But there's stuff they can do to hurt, and that's sort of the problem right now. Marilyn Lanz is in a really good situation in the most contested race, and she's an incumbent. She's raising some money. She's doing that kind of stuff, and I think people think she has a chance of winning that seat. If it becomes a statewide race, which it probably will be, she's going to lose, right?
Well, yeah, but that's the point. You just incrementally move the ball. It's all they can do. They're never going to win a statewide race, not in our lifetime. But
I'm sorry. What I meant by is if the people in that district don't care about who their city or their state representative is, they care more about who their gubernatorial candidate is, and they just straight to get votes, she's toast. That's what I meant.
I don't even know that's the case. I think that place is, you have new voters there. Who knows what the mindset is? We don't have really good data.
New voters, and they've also been burned by Republicans in the past, so they're kind of upset about like how that District 10 race went.
Yeah, we don't have, like I said, good data there with the new demographics and the new, who's the likely voter in Madison, Alabama now.
Well, I'll tell you this, and just speaking of that race, the other race, probably the second most contested race and probably the most contested Senate race, it is probably in that district as well, that District 2 race that former Senator Tom Butler holds, yeah. Where he was Democrat, now he's a Republican. But that seat there is, I think, in play as well. They seem to be kind of worried about it, to be honest with you.
I mean, it should be. There's only so much the Republican Party has to worry about in this state. Mm-hmm. And I would put that right at the, you just hold ground on some of these places. What are they doing? I don't know what they're doing.
Well, also, there's also this, like, who cares?
They raise a bunch of money.
Let me tell you why I say that. I say that because it's like supermajority no matter how those races go. So,
But they raise a bunch of money. They milk every dime out of that town from trade associations and lobbyists. What are they doing with it? They're going to lose, a contested seat? What's the point then?
I mean, they're going to try. I'm just saying, I don't think there's like, there's not a panic over it.
No, there should be a panic, but they should put people's resources to good use. And this is the problem with Montgomery that we always talk about it, it's just like, who's got all the clout? Who can write the big, stroke the big campaign check? Okay, well, that's our system. If we're going to have big dollars floating around, then what are you spending these dollars on if you're going to lose to these like two-bit Democrats?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair way to look at it, that's for sure. But the question really has to be, what else are they concerned about? They really seem to be concerned about letting Tommy Tuberville be on the ballot. That seems to be their biggest concern right
well,
now.
Do you mean Democrats are concerned?
Well, no, I think Republicans want it over too, but that's where their focus is right now.
Where are they taking the thousands of hundreds of thousands of dollars they've raised and applying it to any of these objectives?
Well, not yet. I guess that starts here after we get. Well, I guess you'd normally be after July 4th. Maybe we'll see something.
It's just it seems a little underwhelming that we had to have this conversation, but these are the facts, and this is the way Georgia went down.
Georgia's new data out of Georgia show that state is trending more Democrat.
Yeah, because the Republican Party in that state just kind of existed as a social club or whatever.
Like it was a gimme.
Yeah, they took it for granted. They didn't do anything. Not that they need to be out with the war machine, super aggressive, but they can be aware of problem areas. And the next thing you know, Gwinnett County, Cobb County, Forsyth County, these counties start trending blue, and no one's there to do anything about it. They just fight amongst themselves.
Correct. Yeah, I agree with that. And you've spent more time over there dealing with that, and you've seen that Herschel Walker race. And I think they all read that as a gimme. And they're just like, it doesn't matter who we put up here. And I think they're wrong.
No, you could just get the football player with name ID. It's just like they said, okay, let's go find the textbook of how to win an election. And they got to like chapter two, and it said name ID, and they stopped reading there. It takes more than that. But I think it's really important for Republicans to have a good showing here. But I'll say this about the machine. I mean, they won that Lomax race pretty handily, and we were saying the same thing. So, maybe they got a few aces up their sleeve or something.
Yeah, I don't really like the argument of like, hey, what are they doing? Oh, they're spending $1 million on a state house seat to stop Mo Brooks. I don't know. That's but like it, I
mean,
the
but
money.
Whatever it was, I mean, it wasn't even close.
Right. But my point is that we're talking about what are they doing, and it's like, is that it? Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess just having the playbook, or at least having, Huntsville's different than where way it is down here, but it's trending blue, and I don't hear a lot of, it doesn't have to be panic, but it does have to be awareness.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the panic will come if they win one of those seats.
Well, they did. They won the Maryland land seat right before the 2024 election.
They don't count that one. That was a special. They're not concerned about that seat yet.
They spent money. They had Dalton Dismukes, the political consultant, involved. The candidate there was not great. I just think you got to start.
He didn't do anything.
No, he didn't. He didn't work for it. And then, but they recruited this guy.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I think they're in better shape now. And it's a general election. This will be the actual test to see if there's something there. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, I don't think that Democrats are going to be as revved up as they were for the May 19th primary come November 3rd, though.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, you have a lot going on here. I mean,
well, you had the Louisiana decision like just days before, and you had the Selma and Montgomery rallies. There are a lot of things in the news. I still think it's going to be decent and better than historical, but I don't think it's going to quite get to that peak.
Yeah, and you have this whole thing where you nationally, Democrats are fired up. I mean, they are, and Trump's not on the ballot. And I think you look at the Plattner thing right now. They want left wing nutcases and nut jobs, and whether that works its way into the general election, I don't know.
So we're joined by Del Jackson here on the program. Any fond memories of Lindsey Graham, Del?
No, I don't get this stuff. I really don't. If you don't got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. There's just a lot of people being monsters right now. Your girl Joyce Vance, just an absolute nothing post where it was then bombarded with left-wing cranks. I'm glad he's dead. Don't you think you should be celebrating? Like, they went nuts on Cory Booker, who said nice stuff about him. Anyone that says something nice, they attack him. It's just like, guys.
Well, they created this environment. I mean, they know this is how they ginned up their own base, and that was going to be the expected reaction.
I don't like the idea that every time somebody dies, we just become terrible monsters, and the Charlie Kirk thing. I think was the, maybe not the first one, but it was the one that broke the dam, and it's not going to stop for a long time.
I mean like, who's it? Who are you showing out for on social media when you do that?
Yeah, but I don't know, each other, I assume.
I mean, who's like, that guy said that, you know, whatever you said about Lindsey Graham on the day he died. How awesome is that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw this.
I'm going to follow this guy. He seems like he's really smart.
Did you see Monica Lewinsky?
No.
She said Lindsey Graham, who I disagreed with, I'm paraphrasing, of course, who I disagreed with on almost everything, was one of the few that was fighting to prove that I was being smeared from the White House. And people are like, oh, you know, he only did that for himself, blah, 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 blah. And she's like apologizing for saying nice things about him. And in my mind, I'm just like, you realize that all these people that are like attacking you for saying nice things about Lindsey Graham, they would be smearing the hell out of you right now. If it was 2000 or excuse me, if it was 1996 or whatever, all over again. And this was all happening. These people who are mad about that would be attacking you for you outing Bill Clinton. They would be killing her for it.
I think that people are crazier now about politics than they were 30 years ago, right? Like, it does seem like people put more politics more on a pedestal. And that's of our own doing. I mean, it's what we talk about. But, I mean, there's always been talk radio. You can't blame it on Del Jackson and Jeff Poor. But but people, maybe it's just a product of the country being more secular and needing a higher power, and government fills that void. But people are the democratization of social media. Who knows? But that's the way it feels to me.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's one of the bad things about social media is people try to one-up each other, and it's just sad.
It is. Hey, Del, we got to get out of here. Folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
At the Dale Jackson on any social media site, at yellowhammernews.com as well.
Dale Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Something makes me wonder, is she happy?